Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio SmackDown Report, a special Thursday edition. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour and a half, 90 minutes, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A special 90-minute Thursday edition because of the Greatest Royal Rumble, which is taking place, of course, tomorrow at 12 noon. We will be on the air at 11 to give you a one-hour pre-show. But before we get in to the SmackDown review, and let me just preface it by saying, what a great SmackDown. Really, I mean, this is the kind of programming I've been waiting for from the WWE. It's not without its problems, and we'll discuss a couple of small issues, but what a great overall SmackDown. But we've been besieged with people talking about this Greatest Royal Rumble ever, and that is why we're taking an extra half hour today, so we do not have to discuss this tomorrow when we're only going to have an hour to give you our synopsis and our opinions on who's going to win, our predictions, etc. And a lot of people are saying, oh, what the hell, who cares if they don't allow the women there? You cannot change a country's – that's their country. They got a right to do what they want to do. They got a right to believe what they want to believe. You can't change it. The WWE can't change it any more than when people come to our country. They can't change our laws, etc. And I agree with you 100%. The WWE has no obligation, nor do they have a right to change what that country's policies are regarding women. However, they also do not have an obligation to lend it credibility by having a show there to begin with. Let me just say this. In South Africa, during apartheid and all that crapola, what do you think would have happened if the WWE held a show and they were told, you have to leave all of the African Americans out of it? What do you think would have happened? Well, I'll tell you what would have happened. One of two things. Either the WWE would rightfully have said, what are you, crazy? Then we're just not doing the show. Or they would have went ahead and done it, and they would have been called opportunists, people who were not seriously for equal rights, among other things. That's what would have happened. So let's not kid ourselves. This show is about wrestling, but you know, sometimes we have to talk about the business. And sometimes we have to talk about the real world. And for the next half hour, there's going to be business in the real world, folks. And the real world does not suppress women. And we certainly should not be condoning it, and the WWE should not be condoning it as a company. So in other words, if the WWE wants to break the Saudi Arabian market, here's the thing. The Saudi Arabians are watching it on TV, and they're watching women wrestle. So all that really amounts to is, well, we can watch it, but you can't do it in our country. So the WWE can rightfully say, well, keep on watching it and we'll do it in another country. But we're not going to do it in your country because we disagree with your policy. And if we disagree with your policy, we cannot, as a company, tell the women to stay home. They're an important part of our product. And put it this way. If Metallica were going down there to play a concert and they said, okay, well, you can do your normal show. Everything that you do is normal is fine here in Saudi Arabia. Then you couldn't say, well, Metallica shouldn't play Saudi Arabia because they don't treat women well. Well, whatever. They're going down there for their fans. But that's not what's happening. Saudi Arabia is telling the WWE, change your show. Don't give us what you normally give people. Change your product to suit us or stay out. That's in effect what they're saying, folks. We know what your product is. We watch your product on TV. You can come here and we would welcome you to come here, but you cannot do what you normally do, period, end of conversation. Change your product to suit us or don't come. And the correct move, unfortunately, for the WWE would have been don't come. Now, we can argue all day whether Saudi Arabia is a true friend of the United States or they're not a friend of the United States. Let me just tell you this about Saudi Arabia. They have bigger problems there than women not being allowed to wrestle. Women can't open a bank account without express consent from a man. Christians and Jews aren't really highly regarded by the people of Saudi Arabia or the government of Saudi Arabia, I can tell you that. And yes, I know there's a new administration coming in. They're trying to make it a little more modern. Here's where the real issue comes, folks. And I'm sorry if it's getting political on you, but sometimes this happens. The Saudi Arabian government is attempting basically a PR campaign. Basically what they're saying is, well, you know what? If we can get the WWE to come down here and other acts and everything and lend some credibility to us, yeah, you know, we don't look so bad. We're okay. We're with it. You know, this is all a PR campaign. Now, I found out some things that are very shocking, which we're going to reveal here. And some things that I'm extraordinarily upset with the WWE over. Number one, Triple H has went on record saying, well, okay, the women aren't coming this time, but trust me, we're really going to work on this. Next show, we're really going to try to have the women there. Oh, yeah, because you're going to do what? You're going to change the entire ideology of a country, Triple H? And by the way, while you're saying this, you're signing a 10-year deal with them without them making any concessions to have any women ever wrestle ever. Yeah, you heard right, 10 years. 10 years of putting shows on down there. And hinting that there's probably going to be an NXT-style federation opening up there in which they'd use their talent and their announcers and things like that, as opposed to American talent or whatever. But I suppose some of it could be interchangeable. Basically, they are helping the Saudi Arabian government to wage a PR campaign if we're not so bad. Now, let me tell you something else that allows me to know that I'm right. The WWE is very popular, and the WWE is highly regarded worldwide. But no one in their right mind is giving the WWE between $150 and $200 million. You heard that right. Let me repeat it. $150 to $200 million to hold one show. Oh, but wait. That's just the flat fee. That does not count merchandising. That does not count ticket sales. That does not count anything else. That's just the flat fee. Almost or maybe equal to $200 million. That's not a bribe. You don't think that's a bribe? How much do you think the WWE gets to put on a show? You think it's $200 million? You've lost your mind. I don't give a damn where they put on a show. It's not $200 million. And then add to it all your merchandising, all your ticket sales, all everything else. Bullshit. Now let me tell you something else about that big fat $150 to $200 million that really bothers me, probably more than anything else. There's no proof of this, so I can only tell you that my sources tell me it's a fact that a decent portion of that money, not 50%, but a good chunk of that $200 million is being handed over to the women's division. That's also called a bribe. That's called, we know that we effed you over, and we know that you're mad about it, but we also know that your principles can be bought. So here's your money. Shut up and stay home. I just want you to let that sink in for a minute. So here's the WWE, and I want you to remember who told you that the WWE was bullshitting you with its women's revolution crapola, and that they couldn't give one damn about it, and it was all just a big PR stunt, and it was all nothing but smoke and mirrors. I want you to remember who told you that, because I did. And now here's your proof. They are going to Saudi Arabia. Okay, fine. Look, if the WWE said we're holding one show in Saudi Arabia for the Saudi Arabian fans, and we totally disagree with their policy of not allowing women to be there, but you know what? The fans shouldn't suffer. So we're going to go down there and do one show. I'd be like, whatever. Leave the WWE alone. They're just trying to, you know, play to their fan base. But you signed a 10-year deal with that country, and you don't even know what this new regime is going to bring. This is the same regime. Forget what they're doing to women. I mean, don't forget it, but let's put that aside for a minute. Let's put it aside that their treatment of women is ridiculous. I'm telling you that their treatment of Christians and their treatment of Jews is equally ridiculous. And I'm also telling you that they funnel a tremendous amount of their money, regardless of what they would love you to believe, into organizations that sponsor terrorism. This is none of the fault of the people who live there. So if the WWE wanted to do one show there, God bless them, whatever. I'd say, you know what, look the other way. You don't have a right. You don't have a right to go into a country and say, we're changing your ideology because we're the WWE. No, you don't have a right to do that. And if you say we're doing it once, against our better judgment, because the fans deserve to see a show, okay. Then you know what? I'll defend you. But when I find out you signed a 10-year deal with them, when I find out you're going to do show after show after show after show, when I find out you may even open up a little NXT federation down there, and when I find out Triple H has the nerve to say, well, maybe next show the girls will be involved. Yeah, oh, okay. Okay, because the Saudi Arabian government's going to take a look at you and say, oh, Triple H, you've changed our mind. Our eyes are open. What the fuck kind of an ego do you have? Do you understand who you're dealing with? So you took $200 million to buy your principles out, huh? That's what it took. Oh, and but let's be fair. You took a little bit of that money and threw it to the women's division and said, hey, we're going to buy your principles too. Oh, you're mad about this? Here's some money. Here's some money to make your principles go away. Gusted with this? That if it weren't for the fact that I do this show, I probably wouldn't even watch this. This $200 million, $150 million, it's between $150 and $200 million they were given to just show up. Again, that doesn't count the gate. That doesn't count the merchandise. That doesn't count anything else. They were given $150 to $200 million to show up. And you don't think that's a bribe? You don't think that's a, well, this is part of our PR campaign to make us look like we're okay. We're with the times. We're modern. We're not a threat to anybody. We love the WWE. We're fun-loving people. In the meantime, you're persecuting the Christians and the Jews, and you're keeping your thumb on your women. I'm flabbergasted. Because initially when this happened, I truly and honestly thought that the WWE was simply doing a show, one show. And they were doing it mostly for their fan base down there who watched that show. saying, look, we don't agree with the government either, but we're going to do one show for the fans. Don't get your panties in a bunch. But even then, how many people do you know? Remember the Sun City crapola? With all the racist people down there, they wouldn't let blacks into certain areas of Sun City. And so a lot of the rock and roll performers were like, we're not playing. You got your big resort down there, and you're hiring all these, you know, top-level bands to come play. Well, guess what? We're not playing. And the reason we're not playing is we're not going to lend credibility to your idea that it's okay to segregate an area of the people. Again, what would happen if Saudi Arabia said, look, we're okay with women wrestling, but leave all the black people home? And the WWE said, okay, we'll do that. We'll leave all the black people home. What do you think would have happened? And then to find out, well, okay, we left all the black people home, but we gave them, you know, a bunch of money to shut up about it. What? And I'm hearing people say, it's no big deal. Can't change the country's ideology. No, you can't change the country's ideology, but you don't have to support it. See, that's the thing. And politics aside, you're not talking to some, you know, nut here that's far left or far right wing. I'm just telling you what's right is right. And I'm telling you that if I owned the WWE and I had a shitload of fans in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, and I wanted to do a show there, and they told me no women allowed, I might do one show and say we are compromising our principles one time because our fans deserve to see a live show. But from that point forward, we're not doing it anymore unless this country gets with the times. But to sign a 10-year deal with them and then have the nerve to sneak on a show and say, well, you know, maybe next time, we're working on that, and we're making inroads that next time we can maybe have the women on the show. Number one, these are American women, and this is an American-based company. Nobody suggested that a Saudi Arabian woman jump in and wrestle Alexa Bliss. You don't get – see, this is the thing. This country does not get – Saudi Arabia does not get to change the WWE any more than we get to change Saudi Arabia. So the Saudi Arabian government cannot say, hey, Metallica, we want you to come over here, but here's a list of songs you can't sing. Because then Metallica has the right to say, we're not coming. Well, the WWE does what they do. And they said, we are committed. Oh, remember all of those. It's National Women's. We're supporting this woman's cause and that woman's cause. And here's Roman Reigns crying about, you know, how women were treated. And here's Seth Rollins saying, oh, this is where the, you know, they refused to sit on the back of the bus. And oh, my God. Oh, we're so wonderful. Everybody bow down to our feet because we're changing. Women and the way they're being treated. We're the leaders of this movement. You're full of shit. And you proved it because $200 million bought you. And boy, I tell you something. I would love to say that if a country gave them $200 million and told them to leave all the Jews home or leave all the blacks home, that they wouldn't say, okay, but I bet you they would. Because it's all about world domination to the WWE. What do we care in the grand scheme of things if they suppress their people? As long as we can get our nose in the door, get a little federation started somewhere that can earn us money and get us more subscribers to our network so we can put globalized network up. You get the WWE network, but instead of getting NXT, maybe you're getting whatever. And this is the Saudi Arabian NXT. This is the Chinese NXT. This is the Norwegian NXT. This is what they're going to do. And they don't give one single damn about the rules or rights of any woman or any minority or any group. Do you know in Saudi Arabia you can legally stone to death a gay man for being gay? That's your punishment. Yes, they're saying, oh, we're trying to change. The new regime is coming in and, you know, we're going to be a lot more progressive and whatever. And we're starting right here, folks, right here. We're starting. See? And then the very first thing they do is say, keep the women home. I just don't have words. Except I'm highly disappointed. But I'm not only highly disappointed in the WWE. I am mortally, mortally disgusted with any woman, any one of those women on that roster who take one dime of this money. It's not a consolation prize. Either you have morals or you do not have morals. And I'm telling you, as an Irishman, that if that country said no Irishman can come into this country, and the WWE said, don't worry, all you Irishmen on the roster, we're going to give you a kickback of a few a few hundred thousand dollars to buy your morals, I'd tell them you can keep your fucking money. I'm just livid about this. What kind of a 10-year deal are we talking here? You don't even know what's going to happen in the Middle East. The Middle East is a hotbed of God knows what. And the WWE's down there making 10-year commitments. I mean, I think it's time to slow down a little bit, this world domination nonsense, and take a deep breath and realize that the things you do right now are going to greatly affect your image with the world. And at the end of the day, when push came to shove, even though it's not, I've heard people say it's not the biggest deal in the world. Saudi Arabia is doing way worse than, you know, not allowing women to wrestle. I get it. I get there are worse things to get on Saudi Arabia about. But what I'm saying is this, at the end of the day, when the WWE could have made a stand and say, we're not coming, unless our women who have always been allowed to wrestle, they're not from Saudi Arabia. They don't live here. If we're allowed as an entertainment group to come here and do what we do without changing our product in any way, then we'll do it. But if we're asked to change our product, we are not going to do it. They don't ask them to change the show when it's watched on the network or when it's watched on television. When the movies get pumped down there, they don't tell them to change it. So they're all going to the movies, watching American movies, and that's fine, with women doing whatever they want to do. It's just you can't let it happen in our country. Now, I understand there are people who are saying, look, people come to the United States, and they can't do what they normally do in their country. There are some countries it's legal to smoke pot. Some countries it's legal to kill your wife. But you can't come here and do it, or beat your wife. But you can't come here and do it. You got to come here and you got to listen to the laws of that country. That's right if you're a citizen. Or you're attempting to be a citizen. To my knowledge, the WWE is not attempting to seek asylum. The WWE is putting on a show. If Sasha Banks wants to go live there, then Sasha Banks better get used to wearing a burqa or whatever the hell else they do and get with their program because it's their country. Correct. But the WWE is under no obligation as a visitor presenting an entertainment product to change that product to suit them. Period. And to know that they took $150 to $200 million payoff to do it. And don't think, come on. You don't think that's overpayment? You know what that's like? I'll tell you what that's like. That's like saying, okay, we have a white-only country club, and we want X performer to come there. And he has two black dancers, but they got to stay home. And he says, nah, I'm not doing it. And they, well, listen, what's your normal fee? $1 million? We'll give you $10 million. No, I'm not doing it. $20 million? No, I'm not doing it. $50 million? No, I'm not doing it. $100 million? When do you want me there? The WWE's price was between $150 and $200 million, and they're going to throw out some money to the women to ease the blow of being thrown under the bus. Or as one fan put it, put on the back of the bus. You know, just when you think someone is going to strike a blow for equality, you find out that feet of clay. Before I go to the phones, I will leave you on this subject with one final thing, which is a joke. But it's a joke that is basis in truth. I guess especially for the WWE. And maybe even for the women in that division, which is even worse. There's a bus, and it's half full of African Americans, and it's half full of Caucasians. And they're arguing back and forth about equal rights and non-equal rights, and you're suppressing us, and we're not suppressing you, and black rights versus white rights, and all this nonsense. And finally, the bus driver had enough, and he slams the brakes on, and he says, get out of the bus, everybody. So everybody gets out of the bus, and he says, let me tell you something. From this point forward, anyone who is on this bus is green. Do you understand me? You're all green. And everybody nods, yeah, we get it. He says, good, now get back on the bus. Dark green in the back, light green in the front. Get my point? Don't pretend to be the bastion of equality and right and women's rights. Don't pretend to be at the forefront of the women's movement and then take the money and run. No wonder Paul Heyman didn't want to go. I don't blame him for not wanting to go. I know most of you guys out there are wrestling fans. You're probably bored with this politics, but go find out what Saudi Arabia has to think about the Jews. Go find out what Saudi Arabia has to think about the Christians. Go find out. And then I want you to ask yourself one question. Would you go? And I'm not saying it's the people's fault. Not at all. There are probably a whole bunch of people who's going to pack into that arena who disagree with their government. And who loved the WWE and would have loved to have seen Sasha Banks and Bayley or whoever. It's not their fault. But the WWE could have struck that blow and said, we were offered $200 million to do a show in Saudi Arabia. But until the Saudi Arabian government sees fit to understand that in our world, in our entertainment company, in our company, not their country, they got the right to do with what they want in their country, but in our entertainment business, the women are equal to the men. And if the men, women can't go, the men can't go either. That would have been truly at the forefront of the women's movement. It's not what they did at all. It's not what they did at all. Sabretooth, I'm going to go to you first. This is a big disappointment to me.
Yes, I agree, man. And like you said, man, I mean, they totally sold out their principles for this. I mean, there's no way in hell I would take money. Basically, if those women take that money, they're basically saying, yes, they are right. We are lesser than the men. We're not worth shit if they take that money. That's what they're saying.
Basically, and worse than that even, they're saying we will compromise our principles. See, I'm not blaming the country. If that's the way the country is, they're wrong, but hey, they got the right to be wrong. So if Saudi Arabia says, look, in our country, this is the way we treat our women. You don't like it? Don't live here. You don't like it? Don't come here. That's fair. But then when they say, but we want to use you, we'll pay you a whole bunch of money to use you to make it look like we're really, you know, we're with it, we're hip, we're okay. We'll use you as a PR tool, and we'll throw millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars at you to use you for that PR tool. The WWE had a golden opportunity to say, you cannot buy our principles. We've told everyone for years we are committed to the women's movement as it relates to equality in our sport and in our business. And we will not present less than what we normally present to every other place we go to. If you accept it for one night only, just our group, then we would be happy to come down there and do your show. But if you insist that our women performers stay home, because in your eyes they are not equal, we will not lend that credibility by taking your money and coming and doing your show. I'm sorry, but if that's not obvious, Mike, then I don't know what is.
You're right on that. And you're also right on the whole, you know, you said you talked about Irishmen, you know, and all that stuff. And if that thing, I mean, if that had happened that way, I wouldn't have faulted, you know, Sheamus for not going at all, you know.
Right.
That type of thing, you know. Or I mean, back in the mid-90s when apartheid was at its height and WCW had seen fit to put the championship on Ron Simmons, you know, and they were going to go to South Africa, I wouldn't have faulted Ron Simmons for not going. You know?
Mike, what makes this so egregious isn't that Saudi Arabia has antiquated laws. Like I said, they have a right to do whatever they want. What makes it so egregious is that the WWE, who shoved down our throats for a year and a half, 2 years, how they are at the forefront. We're the leaders in breaking the glass ceiling when it comes to women in sports, especially wrestling. We are the ones who put the very first women's ladder match and the very first women Hell in a Cell and the very first women battle, right? And blah, 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 until even I was getting sick of it. And then when push comes to shove and it's tested, you fail the test because you sold your principles out. And I don't care if Triple H gets on any radio station and says, well, baby steps, we get there first and then we'll work on it. And maybe next show we'll have the women there and you'll see. Maybe they will. Maybe Triple H will be able to say, you know what, we got to bring the women next time. And maybe they'll say, okay, as long as it's just your women and it's just one night only and it's just an entertainment spectacle, we will allow it. Maybe that'll happen. Will that be groundbreaking? Yes, it will be groundbreaking, but we will never forget that you could have held out for that to begin with. You know, it's too late after you go to the dinner at the all-white resort to say, next time, if I can't bring my Mexican friend, I'm not coming. And they say, oh, well, all right, if you have to. Then it becomes an afterthought. Your moment to stand up for your principles was now. And I'm disgusted with the WWE performers, too, because there a certain amount of them should have said, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. You want to fire me, fire me. You want to find me, find me. I'm not doing it. You know, there does come a point where you have to stand up for something that you believe in. I know. Listen, I'm getting it right now as we speak. People saying you're making way too much out of this. My God, it's just, come on. No, I'm not making too much out of it. Because, again, we're talking about a 10-year deal that's being struck here. We're not talking about one show. If we were talking about one show, you may be right. Maybe that's no big deal. One shot only, whatever. But this isn't a one shot only. They're even talking about opening up their own little, you know, NXT-style Middle Eastern company. Think there'll be any women in it? I don't know, man. I don't know. All I can tell you, I'm going to give Sabretooth the final word on this. Sabretooth, I'm very disappointed in the WWE as a company.
Yeah, I'm disappointed and disgusted. I mean, because everything they say going forward about equality and we're this and we're that about the women's revolution, this major move with Saudi Arabia, 10 years, it just renders all of that irrelevant. I mean, you can't say all of that now and not think that we know you're full of shit. I mean, you just rendered all of that irrelevant now. I mean, there's no amount of money that would make me, that they could give me that would make me think that someone was lesser than, you know what I'm saying? There's no amount of money. I mean, and I agree, yes, it's a business, but even businesses should have principles. There's just some things you don't call them the big wheels, and that's one of them.
And you know what? If the WWE didn't shove this down our throats, then we are the forefront of the women's movement. We're doing this. We're making inroads. We're breaking glass ceilings left and right. Let's take a bow. Stephanie McMahon, take a bow. Everybody take a bow. Everybody's bowing. And in the middle of the show, it's Women's Week, and we're going to show you all the wonderful women who refuse to take a seat on the back of the bus, refuse to be treated any less than a man, refused, stood up for their principles. God bless those women who stood up for their principles. But when your WWE girls wanted to stand up for their principles, guess what you told them? Here's some money. Shut up and sit down. Back to the back of the bus. That's what it's the equivalent for me. I'm sorry. And I'm no big, huge, ridiculous, liberal, crazy person who's saying, oh, the poor women. And I get it. But what I'm telling you is this. Principle is principle. And if you want to treat the women equally, then you got to stand by them. I was the one who said for a long time, women don't draw. If they don't draw, there ain't no point of putting them five of them on the card. Why would you put five of them on the card if they're not selling tickets? I understand that. If the WWE tomorrow said we're getting rid of the women's division because nobody's drawing, and all we're really doing is pouring bad money, we're paying these girls big money, nobody's coming to see them, okay, then that's a business decision. That's not a decision of gender. So it's not like I'm some bleeding heart. But I'm telling you that if you've decided to make these women an integral part of your division and you've worked it up to the point where they are drawing, and they are becoming huge and just as big as the men, you've just taken about 10 steps backwards. Anyway, that's the business end of the WWE. Let's get on to the actual show. Let's get on to SmackDown. And this week, I got to tell you, I enjoyed the hell out of SmackDown this week for many reasons. But let me start with the very first one. The Miz has just livened things up like we knew he was going to. He comes out. He gets a great response from the audience. And he says he's going to put Daniel Bryan on this show. And The Miz did something very interesting. Very interesting. At least to me. The Miz turned this whole entire Daniel Bryan thing around sideways. By saying, yeah, I said all these things about Daniel Bryan. Absolutely, I said all these things on SmackDown, talking smack. And I meant them. I absolutely meant them. But that was a year ago. More than a year ago. And I've had a baby. And, you know, when that baby was born, it changed me in some ways. And I just let go of this anger. I just let go of all that anger. And Daniel Bryan is coming out saying he's going to punch me in the face. Can't wait to punch me in the face. Can't wait a whole year to get me over here so he could just charge out here and punch me in the face. So if that's going to make him feel better, come on out and punch me in the face. I can't tell you how refreshing it was to actually have an angle that I said, what the hell's going on? The Miz don't act like he's turning face. He's still telling the fans to shut up and everything, but this has an element of reality to it, which is so good that The Miz does that very well. Fans don't know if Daniel Bryan was going to come out and say, you know what, Miz, you're right. It's been a year and a half. Maybe you have changed. I'm sorry. Let's wipe the slate clean, start fresh. Or if The Miz was going to jump him after he said that. We don't even know what was going to go on. But to turn it around and make it look like Bryan is holding on to his anger and I was a bigger man and I let it go was a brilliant move. And then to bring Cass out was an even more brilliant move. They've changed his look. They've changed his demeanor. They've changed everything about Big Cass. He's looking better, and he cut a damn good promo. A damn good promo. And I'll tell you something else they did in that promo that was worthy of applause. Not every heel likes every heel. The Miz and Big Cass almost got into it. And Cass made it very clear. Not everything in the world is about you, contrary to what you think you what you believe. And so there are shades of gray in these heels and faces now. And we now have something we very seldom get in WWE, and that is a feud that's multidimensional and has some branches on a tree. The Miz is getting into it with Daniel Bryan, but at the same time, Big Cass is also getting into it with Daniel Bryan. The Miz claims he's a changed man. Do we take his word for it or we don't? Big Cass seems to be bitter. We don't even know why. Apparently because Daniel Bryan reminds him of him, which is bizarre. And we're just left with, there's a lot of branches on a tree. And Mike, I got to tell you, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. But also, think about this. It wasn't just that he reminded him of him. That was a big, big Enzo reference there. In that whole spiel that it Cass did. It was a big Enzo reference, trying to get him as far away from Enzo as they possibly can. That's what that was too, you know.
I agree. I think they did an excellent job. I mean, as soon as that interview was over, I said, wow, they put three people over right now. Big Cass is back. They put them over. The Miz is over, and Daniel Bryan, of course, is going to be over in this. So, Todd, excellent job all the way around. Let me go to Sabretooth first, though. Sabretooth, I loved it.
Yeah, I did, too. The only thing about the promo was that it was an okay promo. To me, it was just like a case of, like, the less said, the better, because simply he just could have gotten out and said, like, you know, Daniel Bryan's been laid up, and when he comes back, everyone cheers. When I come back, I didn't get that. I mean, like, he could have simply got it across that way. For me, like, he's okay on the mic, so I would have liked him, like, said less than what he said. But other than that, yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it touched on some things that leave a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of branches on the tree, Todd.
Absolutely right there. That was one of the – I kind of like that promo too. It made a Big Cass more of the heel than the Miz in that promo there.
Yeah, it depended on your perspective. I just thought, wow, this is great. And I knew Daniel Bryan must have gotten beat up somewhere. I knew that was coming. But anyway, the Iconics come out. And I got to tell you that my very first thought after they cut another really good promo and did a very funny Becky Lynch impersonation is, Jesus Christ, they're fighting Becky Lynch and Asuka. They're going to get thrown to the wolves. And I said to myself, if the WWE is smart, Asuka's win streak is over anyway. Let him cheat and pin Becky somehow. Let him have that moment. You got to build some people. You can't just fall back on these same people. You got to build some people. But in my heart of hearts, I never thought they'd do it. I said, no, they're not going to do it. Asuka's going to get the hot tag, and she's going to tap somebody out. And was I ever surprised that they did exactly what I thought they should, and they let the girls get a cheap heel victory that helped solidify them as true heels to be reckoned with, Mike. That's a correct move.
Right, and look, that whole gimmick is a heel gimmick. So in my mind, they almost had to do this to get that gimmick truly over. You know, that whole iconic thing, that is a heel gimmick.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a very well done one. I mean, they're doing a great job at it. So Sabretooth, for them to finally, especially after last week getting tapped, I thought this was great.
Yep, it was great. And Iconics, the whole gimmick reminds me of the old Bellas gimmick when they first started out. You know, of them all like making fun of people, impersonating people. That's the old Bellas gimmick. And with these two girls just working, yeah, and I'm like you. I mean, I was shocked that they pulled that win out because it helps them out. And also, the way they won, it didn't make Becky or Asuka look weak because it was like a cheap victory. But still, though, it was, you know, so Lewis came out looking weak in that whole match.
Yeah, I thought it was a great move. A great move all the way around. We then get a really interesting – God, I mean, I think they listened to this show. Do you remember when I said that they need to really – if they were going to do what they were going to do with the Bludgeon Brothers, they should have had them beat the hell out of Uso right in front of Naomi. But since they didn't do that, the next best thing was to have Naomi say, I don't want you to have any part of them anymore. You're my husband. I understand you're a wrestler. I understand you're a tough guy. But these guys, they're not normal. This is not something we need to be involved with. Well, she basically did that. She basically did that. And Jimmy Uso, Jey Uso, whoever it was, I can't keep them separated. But anyway, did a great promo with her saying, look, this is what we do. If we run away from one team, we're going to end up running away from another team. We don't do this. You know we don't do this. So I'll be fine. It was a great promo. They then come out and we get – now, I know a lot of people are going to say you cannot possibly have him beat Eric Rowan. I disagree. What ended up happening, in essence, was that Naomi's distraction caused a very cheap roll-up win where Eric Rowan wasn't injured in any way. He just couldn't kick out of a three count. And it makes this match – at the greatest Royal Rumble ever, extremely important. Too bad Naomi won't be there. But it leads you to say, well, we now know the Usos can technically pin one of the Bludgeon Brothers. It's not impossible. So I thought it was actually good. Now, a lot of people are saying, yeah, but there goes their, you know, big, we're unbeatable. No, not really. Because the way in which they won was so convoluted that it didn't really weaken their character much, Todd. I thought it was fine.
I thought so, too. I thought it was pretty good what they're doing with the Usos and the Bludgeon Brothers. Like you said, it's a good, pretty good angle right there.
Yeah, because now at least, Mike, we see that the Usos, even with weird circumstances, can put their shoulders on the mat for three.
Yeah, you're right on that. But it brings me back to the whole thing. They basically put Naomi in this angle. You know, she's a big part of this thing right now, and to not have her at that show when they're going to probably, you know, win that championship, it's going to take a little bit away from that match, in my opinion.
Yeah, like I said, you know, it's a shame that she's not going to be involved in any way, shape, or form. You can figure that if this was done in a country where they were a little more forward, Naomi would be a big part of this angle, no question, Sabretooth.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said. I mean, the Bludgeon Brothers lost, but they didn't get beat. They lost, which is a big,
right.
I mean, they didn't get beat. And also, I regret that she's not going to be there because I think they're going to go ahead and do what you suggested last week, after they're going to do something involving her with her husband, because now she's involved herself in this feud. And if the Bludgeon Brothers, their way of thinking, they can blame her for them losing this match. So she's involved in it whether she wants to be or not. And I think they're going to do something along the lines of what they're going to do, like if they're going to like do something to her husband and have her, do something heinous involving her. They have to now because she's in it. She involved herself in it.
It would seem that way, yeah. It would seem they're going to have to go in another direction there, no question. So we find Daniel Bryan beaten up backstage, and Daniel Bryan basically says, you know, if I'm 7 foot tall, I don't have to attack people from behind. It's very interesting where this is going to go. Now, a lot of people have been writing me saying, well, Marcus, though, this is a bad decision because what do you do? If Cass loses his first feud back, there goes his credibility. And if Daniel Bryan loses his first major feud, there goes his, big future. We thought he was going to be built up to fight AJ or Nakamura or whatever. He can't get by Cass. Well, you're right about that. I don't know what's going to happen with that. And we'll see how the WWE handles it. But for the time being, it's intriguing because I'm not really sure what direction they'll go with Daniel Bryan. It's going to be very hard. Daniel Bryan's always been built up as an underdog. It's going to be very hard to see how Daniel Bryan takes a 7-foot-tall guy down, but we do know that Daniel Bryan wrestles logically. He's not going to stand toe-to-toe with him. He's not going to go blow for blow. He's not going to make pretend that I'm just as powerful. There's going to be some logic to this. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. I do think that if Cass gets his ass kicked, that's going to hurt Cass, yes. And I do think if Daniel Bryan ends up losing fairly, that could stifle Daniel Bryan too. So we'll see where that goes. That's a fair point. And we'll just have to wait and see where that goes. We then come to what's supposed to be Jeff Hardy against Shelton Benjamin in a rematch. Jeff Hardy gives way to Randy Orton, just like Randy Orton gave way to Jeff Hardy the week before. And much to my surprise, the WWE put Shelton Benjamin over. Now they don't do it clean. We have the old, reminds me of the old Black Scorpion or Red Scorpion or whatever the hell it was deal where somebody would come in with a mask. It turns out to be Sameel Singh. But I'm just loving these angles because I'm starting to see on SmackDown the pushing of new characters. The Iconics got to win. They're going to be players. Big Cass beat up Daniel Bryan, who's their golden boy, and came out in the first episode of Miz TV and kind of threatened him. He's going to be a player. Shelton Benjamin is finally free of the tag team thing and gets a victory over Randy Orton, regardless of how it's done. So he's going to be a player. And as I'm watching SmackDown, I'm getting the sense that they really are fresh now. SmackDown has really become a fresh company. When I am looking forward to a Jeff Hardy match, because I'm not the world's biggest Jeff Hardy fan, when Jeff Hardy was over in Impact Wrestling, I didn't care for him. I thought, well, he's seen his better days. But I was actually looking forward to this match. I'm like, ooh, Shelton Benjamin and Jeff Hardy was good the first time. This will be good too. And I'm starting to see these matchups saying, wow, you know, you could have Jeff Hardy against this one. You could have this against this. You could do Shelton Benjamin against Randy Orton and Shelton Benjamin against. And you've got some good, solid foundation now. I'm really starting to like the way SmackDown is looking. I think we're going to get better matches from SmackDown than Raw. Really do. Now, the one thing that before we get on a little bit, well, let me get to this match first and see what everybody thinks. Mike, I thought it was great to put Shelton Benjamin over.
It's great to put Shelton Benjamin over, and he almost had to do it because we know that Orton wants to lessen his schedule. And if you look at Orton, you can tell that, I don't want to say he's lazy, but you can tell that he's not quite in the shape that he was in, you know. I mean, he's not close to what Shelton Benjamin is. And look, Jeff Hardy's in great shape as well. So, if this is a way to get to lessen his role, then I'm all for it and bring up Shelton Benjamin. And look, this split up of this American Beta could be the best thing for the two guys.
Oh, there's no question, because both Chad Gable on Raw and Shelton Benjamin are looking great. And I was really happy to see Shelton Benjamin get a little bit of push, Sabretooth, because I don't even think we've seen the best of Shelton Benjamin yet.
Right, and also it's the exact opposite of what they're doing on Raw. So yeah, the guys on Raw had good debuts on there, but they aren't involved in any major storylines. And so you have Big Cass debut on there, and he's involved in some with Daniel Bryan. You have Shelton Benjamin, who's been on SmackDown, but he's getting like a rejuvenation too in this whole thing with Jeff Hardy, you know. So, yeah, it's the exact opposite of what's going down on Raw.
Yeah, no question. They're using their guys more wisely. Let me put it that way. Here's the thing about the negative side. Because up to this point, I'm saying this is an almost perfect show. I'm a good two-thirds of the way through SmackDown saying this might be A+. I mean, I'm buying everything. Everything they're selling, I'm buying. Then we get to the, well, AJ Styles is going to reform the Bullet Club, the Balor Club, Bullet Club, whatever you want to call it. He's getting Anderson and Gallows together, and I'm like, whoa, there's another biggie. I had almost forgotten, you know, when Anderson and Gallows went over there, I'm like, well, without Finn Balor. And I had forgotten, wait a minute, AJ Styles. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, this could be interesting. And then I'm like, well, Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev Day? He was fighting Rusev not that long ago, and Rusev's a face. I don't care what you want to make him. Rusev's a face. So I'm like, I'm not buying this yet. Then something else weird happens. The Bar come in where I guess the New Day have written a book. I guess that's legit. And said, well, don't worry. You probably won't be seeing us on SmackDown long because if we win the belts, we're going back to Raw. Really? That's how that works? Wait a minute. So if you pick the person, I don't even understand. Now I'm confused. If you pick the person and they win the belt from, so if Samoa Joe were to beat Roman Reigns, if Roman Reigns wins at the Greatest Royal Rumble and Samoa Joe beats him, he goes back to Raw? That's the way it works? Nobody told me that. I must have missed the memo. So I'm a little confused about how that works, Mike. I mean, so that's what happened? Even though you got picked, if you win the tag team belt, you have to go back?
Yeah, that was a confusing thing in my mind as well, you know. But I won't call it a misstep. It's just a confusing step. But other than that, you know, and we haven't gotten to.
It's very confusing, you know, Mike, because then what do you do? Everything's an inter-promotional pay-per-view going forward, so what are we expected to believe? That one brand gets the other if they win the – I don't even know where that's going. That's just weird. That's just weird on all levels. I don't get it. Anyway, the Carmella thing. Carmella gets in the ring, does an excellent job. She's dropped a little bit of that thing, and she's going a little bit more for the jugular, but that's okay because she's a champion now. And again, the fans' proclivity might be to cheer her. The fans' proclivity might be to say, well, that's all right. She was an underdog, and we like her. We know she's talented. Let's cheer her. So they make her uncheerable. I mean, they literally make her uncheerable by saying, I want you to play that video package I put together again because you guys didn't give me a standing ovation last week. And then when they don't give her a standing ovation again, she said, well, that's fine. I'll just play it again. And if you don't give me a standing ovation this time, I'll play it again until we get this thing right, which leads to Charlotte coming out. Charlotte does the exact right thing. No microphone, no nothing, signs a contract, and just buries Carmella. Now, the one mistake they did make with this is you never, in my opinion, give the heel the ability to be 100% correct about something. Because then fans say, well, that's true. You want the heel to always be the person that says, the way I look at it, even though I lost this match, I won because I injured so-and-so. And you're like, yeah, you're just covering up for the fact that you lost. You want the heel to always be the guy who twists reality. But when Carmella says, since when in the history of the world does the champion get introduced before the challenger? That's true. Now, I know it had to happen that way so she could do that big, you know, deal of keep playing my promo until you guys give me the standing ovation. I get it, but that should have just been left out. She shouldn't have said that. Because in the back of the fans' minds, they're saying, oh, yeah, that's true. They are playing favorites with Charlotte. You don't want that. Just leave that whole entire part out. In fact, she could have came out and said, I was I asked to be introduced first. I should have been introduced second as the champion, but I asked to be introduced first because I got an issue. And I got an issue with the fact that last week I showed this wonderful package of my highlights, and none of you people gave me the ovation I wanted. So I'm going to show it again and give you people another chance. That would have made more sense, in my opinion, Sabretooth, than her correctly saying, why was I introduced first?
Right. And also, I love the whole dynamic of this feud, because you got Carmella being the spoiled little rich Staten Island girl, and you got Charlotte being the adult in the room. You know, it's like the exact polar opposites, really. You know, and also, how better would it be if James Ellsworth was still with her and she's the champion? Yes, she's good by herself, but she needs someone like a lapdog, someone to take out her nastiness on, to really make people, you know, I mean, really like to show how much of a bitch she is. You know, she needs that. I mean, like I said, she's good by herself, but having someone like to really take it out on would really cement her, and, you know, as long as her character goes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Mike, the whole thing was good. I just think they should have either left out the why was I introduced first, or turned it around to say she demanded to be introduced first.
Yeah, you're right on that. But here's something else that and you missed. You look at that package, and when they went to the ladder match stuff, I guess they had to do it this way because he's no longer there. But, I mean, they cut James Ellsworth out of that package. Now, they had to do that because he's no longer there. But in the back of your mind, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, where's James Ellsworth? You know, we know the whole story with that, you know. We know.
I guess
that
they were hoping to show that she, in her arrogance, refused to show that she had any help. You know what I mean? She purposely said, leave him out of there. I want to. And I get the announcer saying she's done it all by herself and all that stuff. I guess that's what we're expected to believe. A good segment overall, Todd. Again, I think Carmella's doing an excellent job.
I kind of laugh at that video package. She tried to do it like 2 or 3 times.
Right.
Well, I think she could get over as like a good heel right there.
Well, she does, because people are like, I don't want to see this again. You know, this is exactly the type of thing. Everything was working right. The faces were coming off as faces. The heels are coming off as heels. And I'm saying to myself, this is working. This whole show is working like a professional wrestling card should work. But I'm worried. And I'm worried because you know that Rusev's getting his big reaction. And Anderson and Gallows are cold. So I'm not sure what the hell is going to happen. One good move is they changed Shinsuke Nakamura's music. Now, remember when I have told all you people, if you're a heel, you can't be the coolest guy in the room. You can't have the coolest entrance. You can't have the coolest theme music. You can't have the coolest catchphrases. You can't have all the cool spots. You've just got to be a heel. Now, I don't know whether the WWE woke up and recognized that, or Nakamura said, look, they can't be singing my song when I come out, or how can I be a heel? Regardless of who did it, that's the right move. And that shows at least that the WWE is thinking, and they're a little bit ahead of the game. And I'm saying to myself, if Anderson and Gallows come over here, and all of a sudden, because they're reunited with AJ, they're undefeatable. They're this, that, and the other thing. That's going to look like SmackDown's the weak division. It's going to look like, well, we couldn't do nothing on Raw, but over here we're big dogs. So in a way, I was happy to see Nakamura get the win. I was also happy to see how they played it off, where I believe it was Carl Anderson pushed AJ out of the way when Nakamura was going to give him that knee and took the knee. Look, the Rusev thing, say what you want about it. It's a wrong move. I don't know why they're insisting on throwing Rusev into a heel thing and saying, no, he is going to be a heel, and that's the way it is. I don't know why they're doing that. But the ending of the match and the immediate aftermath of the match, Shinsuke Nakamura is doing a very good job as a heel. A very good job as a heel. And if you go back in the archives of this program, not to toot our own horns, But you will find that when Shinsuke Nakamura was in NXT lighting it up, we all said he'd be a good heel because the way he operates and the way he sometimes no-sells and does this or he does that, it's more of a heelish move than a face move. And I think the WWE's finally recognized that, Sabretooth, and I think that's working really well.
And they are getting it so right. And I loved how it made it seem like AJ Styles, you know, it's like when AJ Styles jumped on him, I think they're getting the better of him. Here comes that damn low blow. You're like, oh, that son of a bitch did it again. You know, perfect heel. I mean, I'm like, oh, that fucking low blow. And also what he did with Carl, and also what he did with Carl Anderson as well, like when he took that kick for AJ. He did it again and made AJ watch him do it. And that reminded me
right.
of what the Bludgeon Brothers should be doing with the Usos. Why can't they do that with Naomi and the Usos? Do something like that. That was very heelish. That was very. And that's why I think they're going to do the same thing with the Bludgeon Brothers.
Listen, it was cranking on all cylinders. There's a couple little tiny things to pick on this week about SmackDown. If you want to get nitpicky, the thing with Carmella saying, why was I introduced first, is a mistake. A heel should never be right. The Rusev thing, you couldn't find another couple of heels to put in there? Come on. You couldn't find a heel tag team to throw in there or something? Come on. But aside from that, I thought this was by leaps and bounds one of the best SmackDowns I've seen. Everything worked. For the most part, everything worked. And now let's talk about something else that worked. When you see the Sanity promo, of course, you know, it's a shame that they're not all together. And I don't know. I still say something's up with that. Let's just wait and see what happens. But that Sanity promo makes you very interested in seeing them come up. And Almas looks like he's being handled 100% correctly. And my prediction is, if you let Almas, he's on the right show. See, the way I'm looking at Raw and SmackDown now is this. Raw is for the big, 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 big names and personalities. The ones that you say, they don't even have to put on a good match. It's just about, wow, Brock's there. Wow, Braun Strowman, you know, those type of guys. Where over on SmackDown, it's about, okay, these are the wrestlers. These are the guys who are really going to put on the show. And if you let Almas do what he can do, he's going to be huge. He's going to be a huge heel. He's going to get over like gangbusters, I'm telling you. Yeah. This could go either way. So I'm going to reserve my judgment until I see his debut and see where they're going to go with him. But so far, just from these promos, I'm looking at what could be gold. This could be gold. The WWE's wanted a guy like this for a while, and they just may have him. Because this is a guy who knows the business inside out. This is a guy who can perform in that ring to a very high level. Very, very, very high level. But this is also a guy who understands the concept of entertainment. And that you can't just be really, really good in the ring and that's it. And with his manager, she's extraordinarily good at what she does as well. And they're underplaying them. In other words, they're not coming in saying, oh, we can't wait to get there and destroy everyone. And all Americans are weak and horrible. And they're not overplaying their hand. They're not coming across as heavy-handed heels. She's just saying, look. He's the best in the world. They're going to downplay that just enough to make you say, these are the type of people I believe I really don't like. See, sometimes you jump the shark and you say, well, nobody would say that. Who's coming into the Federation saying everyone is worthless and weak and the fans suck and everybody sucks and the United States sucks and I can't wait to get there and prove that the United States sucks. Nobody's going to do that. So you jump the shark and people are like, okay, this is a satire. He doesn't feel like a satire. They feel like a real, genuine manager-client type thing where she is saying, I am supremely confident in the ability of this man to rise to the top of this federation, and wait till you see him. And in that sense, they're coming off as heels. And they'll come off as stronger heels as they progress. but they didn't overplay their hand. And I think that's so important, Mike, because I think Almas's future is really big in SmackDown.
Right. They're coming off the way Lana and Rusev did when Lana and Rusev first showed up. You know? Exactly that way. And that's the thing. Yeah, they were kind of bombastic about, oh, I'm the Bulgarian brood, and I'm Lana and this and the other, but it was sort of understated at the time. You know, and they got over as the big heels. That's how I see them coming up. And look, I can very, if they decide to use Lana again, I can very easily see a Lana, Rusev, Selena Vega, whatever her name is, and Almas kind of feud. That would be a logical thing. And look, as far as the AJ thing, that was when Carl Anderson took the so-called bullet for AJ, that's a face thing to do. Or are they going to make Anderson and Gallows some faces?
Yeah, I think yes. They kind of were anyway, because they were hanging around with Finn Balor on Raw, so they were sort of facing, they were faces there anyway. So I guess they're making them faces here too. All I know is it's been a long time since I saw a video package and I said, oh, I can't wait to see this guy against, oh, I don't know, AJ, or this guy against Jeff Hardy or Shelton Benjamin or Rusev or any number of people. And when I watch the Almas thing, the very first thing that comes to my mind is, my God, we could see Almas Daniel Bryan. We could see Almas and Jeff Hardy. We could see Almas and AJ Styles. These are all really, really good, solid matches. And I'm saying to myself, I'm anticipating the matchups that could happen. And that's a really good thing, Sabretooth.
Yeah, and also on that promo with Almas, I mean, also his manager, she was doing her thing too, man. I mean, it's like Mike said, it's like bringing back the old, like, manager-client thing. Because she's a threat of her damn self, man. They have a fact of her, like, I mean, like they show her like Hurricane Ronick is some guy. So it was like a promo for both of them. I mean, because, you know, it's like a promo for, like, both of them, not just him, but for her also. And also,
yes. And she's great. I mean, let me get back to you here, Sabretooth. She's great. I'm sure you've seen her in NXT. She's very good at what she does.
Right. And also, going back to the Shinsuke Nakamura thing, they did it again. They added like a whole another dynamic to their feud, because at first it was about the championship, and now they made it personal with the whole Carl Anderson thing. Now it's personal.
Exactly.
A whole other dynamic to it. They did it again. So.
That's exactly correct. And what is Shinsuke Nakamura doing right now, Sabretooth, that heels often do not do? He's not showing all of his talent. He's showing, I'm taking shortcuts. I'm just, I'll hit you low every time just to say I can do it. He's doing everything a heel should do, and the fans are reacting now.
Right. And like you said, the biggest thing was changing that theme music. Because when he was a face, that was my highlight of him coming out. When he come out, I sing along with that damn theme music. But now I can't do it no more. So far he's firing on all cylinders with his heel gimmick. I mean, kudos to them. They're doing it right.
They're doing it right. And if he signs a longer term contract with them, which he might, you can see Shinsuke Nakamura having a huge run as a heel and then flipping face, and the first time he comes back out with that same theme music, Mike, the fans are going to go nuts. So they've got it. They got all their ducks in a row with Nakamura.
Yes, and they could be having all their ducks in a row with the club as well. I mean, yeah, you don't. AJ doesn't need them right now, but they kind of need him, you know, and they kind of do. Need them to be together right now, and if he keeps doing what he's doing, and if Nakamura keeps doing what he's doing, they could play it off that he needs the Anderson and Gallows to help him, because he doesn't know what.
Not only that, Mike, but here's what you got to understand: by Anderson doing that, he did more to solidify himself as a face than he's done in all of the time that he's hung out with Finn Balor, Todd, because he put his money where his mouth is. He took that blow for AJ Styles, who is one of the big fan favorites there, and that's something that the crowd will remember.
You're absolutely right there. That was a good move right there by Carl Anderson to take that shot to that kick to the head from Nakamura Tuesday night, the other night. I think you're going to see members of the club get over, especially Anderson and Gallows, they get over as a tag team.
There's no question they'll get over bigger, Sabretooth, because of that. It was the correct move, and like I said, it did more to solidify them as faces than anything they did with Balor.
Right, and also, before now, I was talking about like how these guys were like brothers. And Tuesday night, that solidified the whole thing. They're like brothers. I mean, you know, he did that for his brother, you know. Yeah, so that was very, it was a very good face dynamic.
It really was, and there's so much you can do. I mean, at this stage of the game, SmackDown has left themselves, like I said, with their ducks in a row, where you say, look, we can have Shinsuke win the belt. He'd be a great heel where people are trying to pick him off. You get Daniel Bryan. You could get, AJ in a rematch, Randy Orton. There's a lot of people who could try picking him off. Be great. Then you could say, well, no, he's not going to win the belt, but, you know, we've got the Anderson and Gallows floating around. They could turn on AJ. They could go with Shinsuke. And if that's the case, then AJ's got all this feuding to go. There's so much you could do. There's a lot of branches on the tree now in SmackDown. The draft, I think, favored SmackDown tremendously, even though they got less people. Now, one piece of news that we should report, and I don't know if it's accurate, but again, sources that I use usually are. I was told that the reason that Samoa Joe was brought over to SmackDown, but away from Roman Reigns after this Backlash match, because they don't want there to be that feud. And that means that Roman Reigns is probably winning. Roman Reigns is probably winning the belt. So this will probably be for the belt. It'll be a one shot, and then you don't have to worry about that anymore. But Samoa Joe is over there. So now there's a lot you can do with Samoa Joe. A Samoa Joe Nakamura match is great. If you decide maybe we'll flip Samoa Joe. There's a lot of material on SmackDown. I see more matches that I anticipate on SmackDown than I do Raw. So to me, SmackDown right now is starting to feel like the superior show again. I'm looking at Sanity coming in. I'm looking at Almas coming in. Daniel Bryan's returned. I mean, think about this. You have AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Daniel Bryan. You're about to have Almas. You've got Randy Orton. You've got Jeff Hardy. You've got Samoa Joe. You've got Rusev. You've got a lot of very, very talented wrestlers over there. And you're starting to flesh them out where they're not just some random guy. You know, I heard a report a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't a report. It was more like a radio show. And I forget who the wrestler was, but my God, did he ever hit the nail on the head when he said the trouble with the WWE in the past several months has been that their booking philosophy is we will put this guy in a match against this guy for no reason except that it'll be a good match. Oh, I know who it was. It was Gangrel. And Gangrel said, if you go back to the Attitude Era, every loss and every win meant something, even if it was low on the card. The reason you lost was this. The reason you won was this. There was always a method to the madness. There was never any random, you lose because whatever. Next week you'll win. It doesn't matter. There wasn't any of that back then. There was a plan, and you were a part of the plan. Whether you were the lowest guy on the card or the top guy on the card, there was a plan. There was a reason you lost. There was a reason you won. There was a reason this match took place to begin with, and it all led up to a bigger picture. And nowadays, it's just, no, you just fight you because that's the way it is. You know, it's almost like just pull them out of a hat. And I thought that was such a cognizant point. But now SmackDown's starting to feel like they're going to go back to that saber tooth where there's going to be a purpose to everything.
Right. And also the one thing that SmackDown has gotten now overall is that now I'm actually looking forward to SmackDown next week to see what happens. Well, I'm not getting that with Raw. I mean, Raw doesn't leave you with that feeling after what, after where you're anticipating what's going to happen on Raw. I'm not doing that with Raw. But SmackDown, I'm looking forward to it because I want to see what's going to happen with, between AJ and Nakamura and the club. I want to see how Nakamura is going to react to Charlotte dumping that table on her. I want to see how the Bludgeon Brothers, what they're going to do. I'm looking forward to SmackDown next week. I'm not getting that with Raw.
So am I, and that's what we call branches on a tree. You know, I'm looking forward to what's Big Cass's next move and what is Daniel Bryan's next move. Are we going to further this Miz thing about him being a new man, and are we being led down the primrose path of, yeah, he's not really a new man, he's just lying, or maybe he's not. We don't know yet. When is the Rusev thing going to finally hit full swing and we see him as a face? What's the deal with, Randy Orton? Is he going to, try to get some revenge on Shelton Benjamin? Is he going to try to get revenge on, at this point, Mahal's in a different company or a different brand, but we're still wondering what's going to happen. What's the deal with the Bludgeon Brothers? We have branches on trees. Over on Raw, not so much. Not so much. It's a shame, really, because I look at the roster on Raw, and I'm like, that's a strong roster, too. WWE has a great roster. A great roster. But I think they're getting a little lost in the shuffle. SmackDown this week seemed to have its ducks in a row. I didn't even mind, as much as I thought I would mind, that Rusev and English were a part of Nakamura's team. Because when that was announced, that was a big bring down to me, because I said, here we go again with them trying to get you not to cheer Rusev. But I didn't even mind it as much as I thought I would, because I just feel something's coming. And as long as I feel they're moving in a positive direction forward, that I can look forward to matches. And believe me, when I start making those matches in my head and saying, oh man, we might see Nakamura win the belt, and then it's going to be Daniel Bryan against Nakamura, or maybe it'll be AJ, Daniel Bryan, and Nakamura, or maybe, maybe Almas will be the next guy for AJ if he gets by Nakamura, and then what are we going to do with Big Cass? There's so many branches on the tree that I'm looking forward to. How's The Miz going to play in this? Because you know he's going to be big. You know he's going to play a huge role. Are we going to see, Jeff Hardy and The Miz again soon? There's so many branches on the tree in SmackDown that I'm looking forward to it too. So unfortunately, though I had to start the show by taking the WWE to task, and I still say one of the worst moves in the history of the WWE, doing this show on Friday, tomorrow, and acquiescing to them changing your product just to try to get over, your world domination theory. That we need to control wrestling in the world, not just the country, the world. I have to give them credit for SmackDown. SmackDown was one of the most entertaining SmackDowns I've seen in a very, very long time. I liked 95% of it, and that's rare. So, for all the good things they did on SmackDown, I'm giving this show, I can't give it an A+, because I still wish they'd have come up with somebody better than Rusev and English to team with Nakamura, and you had people. But I'm going to give it an A-. I think that's how good it was. Mike, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it an A- as well. And look, I understand why we didn't, why they just gave us the sanity package, because we saw what they did on Wednesday night with Eric Young. He was in that title match, and he was in that gimmick, So I understand why they're not giving us Eric Young right away, but they'll give us Eric Young at some point as well. And look, and he's talking about gimmicks that are working, but that are supposed to be a heel gimmick. That whole Undisputed Era is supposed to be a heel gimmick, but it's turning out to be one of the cool gimmicks, one of the cool things, you know. And is threatening to get people to cheer those guys, which I don't think the WWE wants right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're going to have to see where this whole thing goes because, again, you've got a New Day, you've got the Usos and the Bludgeon Brothers, and that's about what you've got in your tag team division, unless, of course, Sheamus and Cesaro stay. And now you're going to have Sanity come in. That's a pretty strong division there. And we'll see how, you know, they treat Sanity when they come in. But I'm guaranteeing you that Almas is going to get treated well. We're going to see a hell of a run, I think, from Almas. I'm looking forward to a lot of these matches. I really, really am. And when they can turn my opinion on somebody like Hardy, who I really, you know, I was bored of watching, and now I'm not. And I was bored of watching Nakamura, and now I'm not. And I was bored of watching the club, and now I'm not. That's a good sign, Sabretooth, because that means they're doing their job. What's your rating?
I'm gonna give it an A, man, because they basically did what they were supposed to do. I mean, they got the heels right, especially with Nakamura. Like I said, the main thing they did was like leave you looking forward to the next episode of SmackDown.
And that's all you ask for as a fan is please make me look forward to the next episode. Todd, what's your rating?
I gotta go with everybody. A-.
So that's a really good SmackDown. I mean, SmackDown got a great rating this week, and I wish we could end on a high note. The reason, by the way, some people are saying, why'd you do the greatest Royal Rumble ever thing this week? You know, why didn't you just leave it for tomorrow if you're going to do the show? Well, we're only going to do an hour tomorrow, folks, because, of course, the show comes on at 12 Eastern Standard Time, noon. So we're going to be here at 11 tomorrow to give you our opinions and our predictions and everything. And I didn't want to take up 35 minutes of it chastising the WWE about what I think is a horrible decision that's going to come back to haunt them. So that's why we did it today in a special 90-minute episode. We will be here 12 noon tomorrow with the greatest Royal Rumble ever report and also, of course, our predictions. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.